If you thought bees are the only creatures pollinating the plants in your garden and the food that you eat, well, I hope you'll think again, because according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, there are hundreds of thousands of other animals, including vertebrates, actually, who all chip in to do the work of pollinating our plants. But they're under increasing threat, and in this part of the show, we're going to take a look at what you and I can do to support those vertebrates and invertebrates' vital work. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And great to have with us a couple of guests who know a whole lot about this topic area. Terry Fuller is president and founding treasurer of the Friends of Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. She's worked on various projects related to native plants, to rain gardens, pollinators, and she helps design curricula for teachers who bring their students to the marsh for an environmental education experience. And Terry Fuller, welcome. Thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Also with us today, Corrine Daniels, nursery director with Applied Ecological Services at Taylor Creek Restoration Nurseries. And she has more than 20 years of hands-on experience with native seeds and plants. She's also a DNR-certified endangered resources reviewer, and thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you, Larry.
You may have some questions for our guest today as we talk about pollinators. What actions maybe should you be taking, or maybe you can tell us what actions you might be taking to help our pollinators thrive, and I know a lot of people are. What's worked? What hasn't worked? What tips do you have for us? We already have, I'm sure, some Facebook comments on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. So if you have one to add there, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Again, just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and post your questions or comments there. When we, you know, I've been saying here, we think about pollinators, usually you think about bees. What other insects or animals help do the work of that? Corrine, we'll start with you. Comment?
Oh, wow. There's a really a wide variety and a whole host of different species. Not in our region, but, you know, might surprise some people to know that bats are pollinators. Mm-hmm. That's more in the Southwest. Beetles are very important pollinators. Flies are probably one of the unsung heroes in the pollination world.
Butterflies. No shortage of flies.
No shortage of flies. Beetles, moths, even, believe it or not, the mosquito.
That I didn't know.
Yeah. I actually felt slightly better about the mosquito when I learned that. But, some species of orchids are pollinated by the male mosquito. So now we can just look at our mosquitoes maybe a little less.
Well, the males aren't biting us anyway, are they?
Oh, that's true. The males aren't. But I don't think you have a lot of females without males.
Well, that's very true. Well, I think most of us understand the important connection between pollinators and our food. Are there other vital roles that they play? Anything else that we can think about?
Well, they're absolutely critical for some of our native species, our native plants. These native pollinators and the native plants, they have co-adapted over thousands of years, and bloom time and emergence of pollinators are synchronized. And without some very specialized pollinators, some of these native plants would completely disappear.
So it's a very critical role that many of them play, other than just pollinating plants. And I'm wondering why they're so under threat. What are the issues?
Habitat loss.
Loss with herbicides and pesticides that are used that diminish their population. I think that there's also the pollinators will pollinate a lot of things, but the need for native plants for those pollinators is also a critical piece.
So there's lots going on. We have callers online already with questions, comments for you. And again, I know we have some Facebook questions as well. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. 1234. You can email us again at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments there. Terry, you work at the, you're a founding president of the Friends of Horicon National Wildlife Refuge, and spend a lot of time there.
I'm the current president, and I was a founding treasurer at the Horicon National Wildlife, for the Friends of Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. It's a group of concerned citizens that work together to support the mission of the of Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. And the interesting thing about the refuge is that many people think of it as just Horicon, but Horicon National Wildlife Refuge is also part of a complex, the Horicon Complex. And the Horicon Complex has many other pieces to it. There's the Leopold Wetlands, which support 57 of our waterfowl production areas in the state of Wisconsin. The Green Bay National Wildlife Refuge has 330 acres. There's the Fox River National Wildlife Refuge in Montello, and we're going to be adding a little bit of a piece to that. And there's going to be a dedication in June that will be part of the Muir Park State Natural Area, and the Fox River National Wildlife Refuge will be adding 1,400 acres to that. And then the final piece in our complex is part of the Gravel Island National Wildlife Refuge, which is located near Washington Island. And I think it's already been talked about. If I recall, there's a St. Martin Island that's going to be also added to the complex in the near future.
So this is a way to tie all these, you're working to tie all these together in some fashion?
Yes. The complex is, the people at Horicon National Wildlife Refuge, the headquarters there, Steve Lenz, they overlook all of these different areas in the state of Wisconsin.
That's very, very cool. Connor in Cumberland is on with a question, and let's go there. Connor, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. This kind of goes back to the different bugs that you were talking about that can be pollinators.
Yes.
I work on a farm down in Iowa. It's my grandpa's farm, and it's a specialty produce. So we need a lot of pollinator help. So we do import, or not import, we buy bees from a provider in the area. But one of the issues we have is with cucumber beetles, actually. And they do, I've seen them, even before we get the bees, do a lot of pollinating for us. But they also, you know, destroy a lot of our cucumbers and our summer squash and stuff like that. So I just wanted to ask the guest kind of what the, how you should approach something like that, where there's something that is helping pollinate, but is also, for at least from an agricultural perspective, kind of harming the operation.
Yeah, that's a good question and probably a tough one. Corrine, you comment?
Oh, that is a tough one. And I'm sorry to say that is outside of my area of expertise, and that is one of the drawbacks. I think when you're dealing with the natural world, is obviously if it's a food plant, it's a food plant.
Yeah.
Well, I think that one of the things you can do is, if you plant native plants, it will bring in predatory insects. And I know they're starting to look at planting strips of prairie in Iowa, and they're doing some research regarding that. And they're noticing that it brings in not only the pollinators, but it also brings in predatory insects that feed on some of those things. So if you can put some of your native plants around there, that will bring in more of the other insects and predatory insects that might feed on your cucumber beetles.
So that's something that's actually under research right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. Connor, it's something to consider and something to look into. You might want to, let's go online. You might want to go online and take a look. I'm sure there's probably, since they're working on it, there's probably some research and publications on it. And maybe Terry Fuller will have some. She's doing a little research on her own right now. Maybe she'll have something for us here as well as time goes on. So stay with us. Stay
listening. Have some, on November 18th, the New York Times put an article in called Sustainable Solution for the Corn Belt. And it was written by Mark Brittman, Bittman, B-I-T-T-M-A-N, and he talks in there all about this planting strips of native prairie, which will help support not only pollinators but predatory insects.
So New York Times and Mark, is it, or Marv?
Yeah. Mark.
Mark Bittman, B-I-T-T-M-A-N. We'll try and see. Our Jennifer Dargins, our on-air producer today, we'll see if she can find that article. We can post it up on our Facebook page. So it's the November New York Times, Mark Bittman. Okay. Thanks, Connor, for calling. Appreciate it. We'll see if we can come up with that article. Mark in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Hi. What I'm trying to do is identify an insect. I had a friend that told me that this particular bug insect was a good pollinator. So what? And he said that it filled holes. So I took some wood, old scrap wood, put it on the bottom of some poles that I have birdhouses built on, and drilled about 25, 30 holes in this piece of wood. And sure enough, there's an insect that comes in, and it's supposed to lay eggs inside these holes.
Mm-hmm.
So that attracts them to lay these eggs, but they're supposed to be a pollinator.
Yeah, and I think our guests probably know what bee you're talking about there.
Well, that is whole group of bees.
Yeah.
A whole group of bees that are sometimes called the wood bees or tunneling bees.
Mason bees?
Mason bees, sometimes named, also called mason bees.
Yes, okay. And the interesting thing about bees is I also raise honeybees, but one of the things I like to keep a check on is to make sure that I still have the native pollinators in the yard. And honeybees are sort of, they're kind of the upper echelon of bees as far as, first of all, they're introduced bees from Europe, but they don't like to work long days, and they don't like to work when it's rainy, and they don't like to work when it's cold. So, but our native pollinators do all of those things. We have 21 species of bumblebees, for example, in the Northeast, and they're hardworking bees, and so are the mason bees.
Yeah. So you're doing a good thing, Mark.
So they're mason bees?
Yes.
I would say mason bees, yeah, here.
Okay.
And actually, I would say keep doing it. And if you go online, you're going to find out a lot more about mason bees, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and is that something that if I want them to come back because some of those holes fill up and they stay filled up, should I unplug those each year?
No, they don't have anybody in nature that does that, so I would just leave them.
I would leave them, and you can, don't be afraid to drill some new holes and add more.
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. We'd love to hear from you. And we have some other callers online. Judy in Grand Marsh has a question for you. Judy, hi. Thank you for calling.
I have been so waiting for this program. I have a concern with the accidents they seem happy to cover when they have giant trucks full of bees being transported. And they're on freeways. They appear to have no escorts, no police in front or a car in back. Or they do this for construction crews. They do it for our farming vehicles that are so big, if they're going to be on the road, they sometimes can have help from some sort of support. When you see these dreadful accidents and they're scraping these life-saving critters with shovels and hosing them down with fire hoses, it's a catastrophe for our food crop and everybody wants to eat. Why in the heck can't they have more laws about how they're transported and protection for the vehicles? They could have more flashing lights or the escort idea or something, but to lose millions at a crack, and they've had at least one accident like that every year for my recent memory, and I'll listen off the air.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Comments from either of you? Terry, a comment from you?
Well, I agree that it probably would be a good idea if they would have some kind of escort to make sure that these types of accidents didn't happen. And it did, that I don't know how that would.
You don't know how it would actually could be done. I wouldn't.
No. Yeah, I'm not certain of that either. There are hundreds of beekeepers transporting bees
all the time, so it'd probably be very difficult for them to do that.
Certainly a concern, though.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling, Judy. Maybe somebody else will have some thoughts about it too, or comments. We have a lot of things that we can talk about here, and one of the things I wanted to talk about with Corrine is Applied Ecological Services. You know, you've been doing this a lot. Talk about your operation and your organization.
Oh, thank you. We grow about nearly 300 species of mm-hmm. native seeds and plants. And again, you know, these are, you know, those important relationships between the pollinators and the native plants. We operate out of southern Wisconsin, about 45 minutes south of Madison. And we are serving some really exciting projects, including Northerly Island, which is Old Meg's Field in downtown mm-hmm. Chicago. If you've seen that mm-hmm. in the news, that's been totally overhauled, providing all the native perennials for that project. Just a super exciting project. And I think something that I have seen in the business that's really been changing and evolving is this whole focus on pollinators. There's, you know, we've always seen some of that, but it is absolutely, you know, thriving. You know,
so it's
interest.
Something that your organization is putting a lot of effort into and a lot of time into.
Very much so. And, of course, monarchs as well now are such an important focus with the crash of the population.
Yeah, and that is of serious concern. You know, you hope they're going to come back, and they probably will if they get some help. And that's kind of what we're in the business of talking about today. Corrine Daniels, Nursery Director with Applied Ecological Services at Taylor Creek Restoration Nurseries. Terry Fuller is president, founding treasurer of Friends of Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. Our guests here today, Jennifer Dargan, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're talking about wildflowers for wildlife with our two guests, Corrine Daniels and Terry Fuller. If you have questions or comments, maybe you have some questions about what you can plant to attract those great insects and those great wildlife that actually help our plants pollinate. I hope you'll join in. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Dean from Sparta commented on Facebook that he's noticed a lack of bees this spring. There are none on his apple trees or rhododendrons. And comments from you on that?
It was a hard winter. Mm-hmm. A hard winter for a lot of our insects, a hard winter for bee colonies, mm-hmm. I'm aware of, and even really a hard winter for a lot of plants trying to overwinter. And I would suspect that's what we're seeing.
Yes, I know we have two colonies of bees that we keep, honeybees, and we lost them this winter. Because what happens too is there was plenty of food source for them in the hive, but because they're not really used to the cold, they sort of hunker down in the middle, and we ended up with beesicles.
Oh, that's too bad.
But again, planting native plants will help bring in those native pollinators, which are a little bit more resilient in our environment, because they've co-evolved with all the plants, they've also co-evolved in this habitat, so they're going to be more resilient and survive better.
And so many of those native pollinators are below ground
right.
all winter long, as opposed to, you know, these above ground hives.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
When you're planting a garden, let's talk about choice. What choices should you be making to help support pollinators?
Well, something that's really, really critical is to try to have something blooming very early in the spring through fall. And, mm-hmm. you know, again, planting native plants is a really great way to do that, because so many of our horticultural varieties, they obviously they've been bred for certain characteristics.
Yep.
They've been bred to bloom during when we want them to bloom. Mm-hmm. You know, really your May, June, July, and many of those ornamental varieties have been so selected that they don't have good pollen quality. They may have little or no nectar. And so planting natives, or at least wild, at least old-fashioned heritage.
Mm-hmm. Do you have some? Give me an example, perhaps, of a couple of different ones that do bloom early and that might be useful.
Oh, prairie smoke would be an outstanding one. Botanical name, Geum triflorum. Mm-hmm. The prairie smoke, pretty commonly available from most of the native growers. And mm-hmm. we are actually very lucky in the Midwest to have quite a number of native
some
providers.
Really good ones.
Good ones. Others would be the passiflower. You know, the good old-fashioned violet is actually outstanding, and most people have that. And avoiding killing those off in your yard is pretty critical.
They're a host plant for fritillary, the butterfly, and I think that's what it is. Anyway, they're a host plant for a butterfly. But the other thing that I think is critical in the early spring are pussy willows or some type of willow, because they create pollen that the early species that come out will utilize quite easily. And they're a nice one. And then Mertensia or Virginia bluebells are really popping right now. And I even actually saw one of our birds that does pollinate is the hummingbird, our ruby-throated hummingbird. Mm-hmm. And the male who comes back earlier was there the other day in my yard pollinating away and getting nectar, actually.
Oh, that's, I do a little run every morning and I along one path where there are some willows. And you see a lot of insects. And actually, a lot of bird life too. I suppose they're either feeding on the insects, or they may be feeding on what the tree has to offer as well.
And one of the things that native plants create is they create a lot of what they call biomass, which are the insects that are on there, and that biomass feeds the birds and supports the other animals that live in that ecosystem.
I mean, you know, I think it's. Probably, I'm sure you're going to agree with this. It's important to have the type of habitat for these insects and for these animals in a non-fragmented situation. And we have a lot of fragmentation,
mm-hmm.
and that has obviously that's going to have some effect on. What do we call nectar corridors? Is that the term that gets used?
You could use that term.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we're seeing that just ramp up, that fragmentation. And especially in Wisconsin in the last couple of years, we've seen fields. And I grew up on a farm. I'm in no way mm-hmm. dissing mm-hmm. farming. But as we pull out our fence rows, mm-hmm. we're removing habitat, refugium, they'll call those, the fence rows, where not only do we have plants producing nectar and pollen, but we have the actual habitat, you know, nesting areas that's being mm-hmm. fragmented. And that's very difficult. It's sad to see. You know, and sometimes I think we as individual homeowners, we look at that and we think, well, gee, you know, I don't have 300 acres. I don't even have 50 acres. Mm-hmm. I have a tenth of an acre. But, you know, we can be part of creating that corridor. If each of us puts in a butterfly garden, a pollinator garden, or even, you know, even just a little patch.
Yeah. Plant an oak. plant a big, beautiful oak, and it will draw in over 230-some species of different insects and birds and wildlife that feed on it. Oak is vital to our ecosystem, to keeping it healthy. It used to be chestnuts, which mm-hmm. the blight took out, but the oaks are sort of replacing that. Cherries are wonderful trees, and you can also plant understory trees and shrubs, any of the native plants. I know Taylor Creek also sells those, but Johnson Nursery in Menominee sell some of those plants that will help people to put the native back into their garden as it.
Yeah, you know, you have an event coming up. Before I forget about it, I want to make sure we talk about it. This Saturday, called Wildflowers for Wildlife, Terry Fuller, and maybe you could talk about that for a minute.
Okay, Wildflowers for Wildlife is an event that we started last year, actually in partnership with the Department of Natural Resources. Many of you may know or may not know that Horicon National Wildlife Refuge is about 33,000 acres, but around 11,000 acres is part of the DNR, and the other 22,000 acres is part of Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. And at Horicon National Wildlife Refuge, we're going to be having an event from 9 to 1 on Saturday. And there will be continuous events offered by the Refuge Friends and by U.S. Fish and Wildlife personnel. We will be having our native landscape tour. We will be having activities for students, for children. We will be having a talk on native pollinators around 10 o'clock, that is. And we will also be having a guided hike on our new trail by our visitor center. So it's a day full of activities and education. There will also be plants for sale. So if you want to come out and buy some native plants, you're welcome to join us on Saturday. And otherwise, if you can't come Saturday, come some other time.
Well, yeah, and Saturday, what are the times? What's the
9
time?
9 o'clock until 1. Did I say 11 before? 9 to 1.
9 to 1? Okay, mm-hmm. Excellent. Because, great. Stop in and maybe buy some plants, take in some of the educational information, and then take a walk around the refuge. I mean, there are some wonderful walks on that refuge.
Right. We have a new trail by the visitor center, but also off of Highway 49, we have our auto tour, which has a wonderful boardwalk, and then several trails off of that. So some of our trails are go through prairie areas, and some of them go along the wetland areas. Last weekend there was the bird festival, and people mm-hmm. saw the trumpeter swans nesting, and a whooping crane swooped down in front of them. We have the warblers coming through, so it's a wonderful time to visit the refuge.
Absolutely. I've meandered around those walks many a time, and it's really always a lot of fun. It's always something new.
Right, and it is.
It doesn't matter what time of year.
It changes.
Connie in Portage has a question. Hi, Connie.
I have trouble with my jelly for my Oreos. I guess my jelly's too good. I'm the lady that had the hummingbird in the jelly. Well, now my bees, for a long time, they die in my jelly, and I don't know how to keep the bees out so that the the Oreos can have their jelly.
Well, they might add an extra little bit of protein to your jelly.
Oh,
well,
my
I got
goodness.
The hummingbird out safely, but I can't figure out how to keep the bees out.
You know, I don't know how you do it either, because I have the same problem. Exactly the same problem.
Okay.
So you're going to lose a few.
I sure do.
But I think overall, in the end, some of those bees are going to be in there grabbing and getting some sustenance to take back to their own locations. I would expect, Corrine.
Sure, that's right.
Yeah. So there you go. Wish we had a better answer for you, Connie, but I just don't have one. Charlie in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hey, I got an answer for the jelly. We do this with bees in our bee yards. We'll put islands for the bees to stand on in water and in other things when we're floating them. So either put pebbles or rocks that they can stand on that are in the middle of it, or put corks, because corks float. We put them in water, especially if we're putting water out and we want to not have the sun evaporate it so fast. We'll fill it full of wine corks, and the bees will go in between where the wine corks touch and be able to drink, and the sun won't take the water away so fast.
Well, that is cool. You just and then you've got the advantage of having to drink a few bottles of wine to get.
No, I know what to do with my wine corks.
I've got a few of those wine corks at home. That's a great idea. I like that.
Your local wine store will be happy too.
But you had another comment, I believe. Did
yeah,
you?
Yeah. What I wanted to ask the guests a little bit is so I'm a beekeeper, a natural beekeeper, and I've been running into issues as I'm advocating about bees, trying to get people to grow more flowers, and I love all of the points that you're giving us. But I've been reading a lot about the big box retailers using a new class of flowers that are all systemic insecticide raised, meaning they all use the neonicotinoids that many of us think are having the problems. Now, one of them, Lowe's, through an avid protest that's been going on nationwide, write in candidate, you know, letters, has said they're going to stop using it, but their contract runs out in 4 years. So we still got 4 more years of people coming into stores like Home Depot and saying, can I get some flowers for my bees, and putting flowers that might actually hurt, not help. What's the comment from our...
Charlie, thanks a lot for calling, and let's go turn to Corrine first. To Corrine?
Yeah, Charlie, that's really troubling, the trend. And, you know, these big box stores, the reason that's a challenge for them is they import their plants, usually from other states. And there is a, the Japanese beetle is the primary reason that we're seeing the neonics. They call them the neonics in the industry. And there's an insecticide that's applied that will kill the grub, kills it in the pot, kills it in the soil. They're trying to, Canada and the United States are trying to contain the movement of the Japanese beetle. And so the nurseries are all required to enter into this agreement saying, if I'm going to ship my plant across state lines into these different classifications of states, depending on how invaded they already are or are not with the Japanese beetle, you must enter into this agreement with the state. It's part of the Department of Ag. And so if you're buying plants that have been imported across state lines, very high probability that they have been treated with the neonics. So the best way to avoid that, whether you're buying natives or non-natives, is to buy local. Buy from the smaller greenhouse that is doing their own propagation. They have Wisconsin, the genie is already out of the bottle. We are already completely infested with the Japanese beetle. We are under no requirement to treat. So buy local, buy native. None of the native growers are treating with neonics. I've been on the phone with all of them when I became aware that we had to do this and said, hey, guys, what are you doing? And none of us are doing that. So buy native, as long as they're not the native ours, cultivated natives, true wild types from the native growers, you are not going to run into neonics.
Very good points. Charlie, thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Pat in Milwaukee has something for us. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call.
I got a comment about the mason bees.
Sure.
A fella called earlier, and I just wanted to say that I had them arrive on my property on their own. And I was in the country, had a stone driveway, and part of the driveway was filled with the topping gravel, the very fine gravel. And they burrowed into it. And what they do is burrow in at night, and then they come out in the morning, and they cover themselves up at night, though. So every day they come out, and then they bury in. And they are hardworking. They come out very early in the morning. They work very late at night, and they're non-aggressive. So they covered a large area in the driveway, and we could go about our daily functions, walk over it. They never bothered us. They're a wonderful bee.
Well, you're not going to get any argument from me, Pat, and I don't think from our guests either. Terry, they are wonderful, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And you repeated the fact that our native bees are hardworking. They work sun up till sundown. And so
there you go.
Congratulations.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Paul in Delavan up next. Paul, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a beekeeper in Delavan, and right by my honeybee hive, I've noticed carpenter bees nesting in the rafters of my shed. And I've done a little research, and it looks like their range is a little south of Wisconsin, and I'm wondering if other people have encountered them. They're huge bees. They look like a bumblebee, but they're bigger.
Yeah,
and they don't nest on the ground, which is the obvious difference.
Yeah, And I don't think they bother the other bees, though, either.
No, they're very docile.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And if you have a soft piece of wood, maybe that's what they like to, get into that. So sometimes they can cause issues, but I haven't heard a lot of them, as you mentioned, being as much in Wisconsin. But,
we got climate change. Maybe that's one result of it. Interesting. Thanks, Paul, for calling. Benjamin in Dubuque, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for addressing this important topic. Neonicotinoids since the 1990s have just decimated our native pollinator populations. And I just wanted to point out that they're actually made by Bayer Crop Science and Syngenta and DuPont Chemical. A lot of people don't know the actual names of the compounds, but the most common one is called imidacloprid. And also you have clothianidin and thiamethoxam. So if you ever see those on the label at Lowe's or Home Depot, very important to avoid those.
Well, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate those comments, Ben. And we have, we're looking at a great weekend coming up at Horicon National Wildlife Refuge.
Yes, we are. It's going to be a wonderful weekend.
And again, it's 9 to 1?
9 to 1.
And
9
what,
to 1.
And what are we going to have? We're going to be able to buy some plants.
You're going to be able to buy some plants. Not shrubs or trees this time, but just some of our native plants. Do you have a list? Well, we have a bunch of wonderful things available. We had a pre-sale, which allowed people to buy plants very inexpensively. Part of the sale is mostly to get these plants out there. And also part of the day is to educate. We want to educate people. We have people there that will answer questions if you have them. So if you show up and you have a question, we're going to have experts standing by. And there'll be activities again for children. There'll be activities for people if they want to go hiking and looking at our native plantings.
And Terry, I'd like to thank you for inviting Taylor Creek to participate with you.
I was going to ask, Corrine, if you were going to be there or not.
I won't personally be there, but we do have two people that'll be there. Mm-hmm. And plants we do expect to go pretty quickly, so try to get there early. And we will have experts on site.
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it's a collaboration, again, between the state and the Department of Natural Resources. There will also be members from the DNR there in supporting our efforts to get native plants out there and also to support native pollinators.
And, hey, what better place?
Right.
A wonderful place to spend a few hours.
And to remind people, this is the National Wildlife Refuge. It's on County Z. If you take 49, it's about 3 miles south of County Z. So we have two refuge buildings, or two buildings, and some people might end up in on Highway 28. That's not where you want to go.
There you go. Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. And I know it's going to be a wonderful weekend. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Well, thank you, Larry.
Corrine Daniels, Nursery Director with Applied Ecological Services at Taylor Creek Restoration Nurseries. Terry Fuller, President and Founding Treasurer of the Friends of Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. She worked on the landscape project and various projects relating to native plants, rain gardens, and pollinators. So great. Well, learning about what they've been up to, and really talking of, I think it's a nice little transition into our next program, because coming up, Katie Belfus is going to join us to talk about American Wetlands Month, and we're going to find out why wetlands are so important and how you and I can protect them. That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.